Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Well, as you regular listeners know, we've begun a new series here on HealthLink On Air, Difficult Healthcare Decisions. My co-host for this series is Dr. Gregory Eastwood, professor in SUNY Upstate's Bioethics and Humanities Center. And he joins me at the microphone this morning. Good morning, Dr. Eastwood.
Good morning, Trish. It's great. Nice to be back.
And we're really happy to have you here, and I'm going to ask you to introduce our guest this morning.
Well, it's a pleasure to introduce Pat Knox. Pat is a colleague and a friend of mine. We've worked together for several years as partners teaching medical students in the medical student curriculum for ethics. Pat is the clinical coordinator of the palliative care service here at University Hospital. She is a registered nurse. She has a Bachelor of Science degree. She received her nurse practitioner degree in 1993 here from our own nursing school at SUNY Upstate. She is board certified in advanced practice in palliative care. She's had training at the well-known Kennedy Institute at Georgetown University in D.C. in bioethics. And she's just an all-around good person. So we're happy to have her here.
Thank you. Good morning, Pat. We're really glad you're here because this is an important discussion. And the topic this morning is a difficult one. It elicits emotions, spirituality, perhaps some fear, concern, certainly passion. Dr. Eastwood, will you explain this topic? It's self-determination about the end of life, in effect, the right to die.
Well, we live in a society that values the individual right to do just about anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's somewhere in our Constitution and in our Declaration of Independence for this country, and I would say these ideas really are permeated throughout much of the contemporary world. So the question of the right to die sounds a little bit inflammatory, but many people feel that the right to die is up there along with the right to live and be happy and so on. There is a guideline for this that I have used, and it has to do with the oath that some physicians take when they graduate from medical school. We think of the oath of Hippocrates mm-hmm. as being something that physicians take, and of course that's very common. But there's another oath called the oath of Maimonides. Maimonides was a physician, a rabbi, a jurist or a judge who lived in Muslim Egypt in the 1100s, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an oath that's attributed to him. Now, incidentally, he probably did not write it. Somebody else wrote it about 300 years ago.
Okay.
But regardless of the authorship, I think it's an interesting guideline, and I'd like to read part of it to you right now. It begins by these words. It says, "Thy eternal providence has appointed me to watch over the life and health of my fellow human beings. May the love for my art actuate me at all times." Then later it says, "May I never see in the patient anything but a fellow creature of pain." This pretty much focuses the physician's responsibility, and I would say by extension, all healthcare professionals, on the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And then the end of it, I think, is particularly precious and relevant. At the final part of the Oath of Maimonides, it says, "I have been appointed to watch over the life and death of my fellow human beings. Here am I ready for my vocation, and now I turn unto my calling." He says, "I've been appointed to watch over the life and death." And I take that to mean that life and death are a continuum,
mm-hmm.
not separate things, but a continuum. And it calls to the physician and nurse and other health professionals to attend to life and death of the patient in that context.
Well, and that brings us really to the core of this morning's discussion. And as you said, as autonomous human beings, and certainly as Americans who we think we have a right to do everything, do we have the right to determine when it's time for us to die? And we don't mean necessarily jumping off a bridge. We're talking about people who are sick, debilitated, and they come to a point in their life where they no longer want to live. And they may have religious objections or they may not. They may have just opinions in their culture that they come from that tells them that they can or they can't. But it is a question that arises. It has arisen in legal terms. It has arisen in medical terms. We have physicians who are asked to participate and are willing. We have physicians who are unwilling. The whole thing is a hodgepodge, but we have to go back to that right. And that's, of course, why we've brought you in, Pat. You probably run into this on occasion in your work with palliative care.
Yes, I do. I deal with patients who have serious and life-threatening illnesses on a daily basis. And oftentimes these are the questions that they bring up either in terms of with the physician as to what's the goal of care, how much longer do I continue a treatment, or the family may have those questions also. How long do we continue allowing someone who maybe has multi-system organ failure to continue in an ICU? Or do you continue to treat someone with an incurable cancer? How much longer do you keep taking chemo? How much longer do you do these treatments? And what's the impact on that person and their family?
It strikes me that this really becomes a question individually of quality versus quantity of life. Do I just want to keep living because I can, or do I want to keep living because there's some quality to my life? Is that part of the ethical conundrum we're talking about here, Dr.
It's
Eastwood?
It's very central to the ethical question. And of course, this resolves to a great extent to individuals' personal beliefs about life and death. I don't always like to look at things along a continuum because it's more complex than that, but let's just look at it for a moment that way. On one end of the continuum are people who believe that life is precious above everything else, and that regardless of everything else that's going on, life should be preserved. Most of us feel that life is precious, but might not feel quite that way, and we would take into account other things like comfort, pain, quality of life, whatever that might be. We can maybe talk more about that. Also, we would take into account our loved ones and the feelings of our loved ones, and maybe age and disability and those things. It's very common for people to say, if I'm in a condition where I can't think or I'm in great pain, I don't want to live anymore.
You know, I was thinking this through and wondering how big a question this was. Maybe how many people, if I could find some statistics on those people who would consider that the quality was running out on their lives and they would want to make the self-determination that it was time for them to die. And I'm just going to give you a couple of them really quickly. According to the Center for Gerontology and Healthcare Research, 70% of deaths occur in hospitals and nursing homes and frequently involve some level of futile or unwanted treatment. So that unwanted treatment was really my clue. And even when general discussions are done and studies are done, 53% of Americans say that, yes, they would want to discontinue treatment under some of those, like you were saying, people who are in pain or have these diseases, maybe some of the cancers that can't be cured and so forth. And then I also have to wonder if this isn't sometimes a question of someone's age. If you are 50 or 55 years old and you have a difficult disease, but your family is all around you and your friends are all around you, you might see it very differently from someone who's 95 and has lost a spouse and lost all of their friends already. Pat, is that something that you run into?
It is. And again, we see patients of all ages. We've had people as young as in their 20s and 30s with illnesses from which they were not going to recover. I do think that they struggle much harder with these decisions as to continuing treatment and continuing care because of that, because they have young children, they have young spouses, and they do feel that maybe their life has not been long enough and they've not been able to accomplish. People who are older, though, may have a different feeling also. I just had an experience with someone in their 80s struggling against cancer, but feeling that they needed to do everything and continue everything because that was what was the right thing to do.
That was the right thing to do, and that may have been for religious reasons. It may have been their culture. It may have been their family around them. I'm going to read a story. This is actually from Jane Brody. She's a New York Times reporter, and she wrote this not long ago. It's a passage from an article because it actually highlights two of these stories, and I'll read these, and then we're going to take a break and come back and talk about some of the specifics. What Ms. Brody said was, my high school biology teacher was 94 when I visited him in an assisted living center, though physically independent and medically well. He was not happy. Gesturing toward a dining room of people in various stages of physical and mental debility, he said, "I feel like my mind is going, and I don't want to end up like them. While I still can, I want to be able to check myself out. Will you help me?" Well, I said I empathized with his request, but because I was in no position to honor it, I suggested he speak with his children, who should agree with any exit strategy he contemplated and perhaps be able to expedite it. Why shouldn't an emotionally sound, thoughtful person be able to call it quits when life has dragged on too long, when there is nothing to gain and much to lose from an ongoing existence? And then I thought about my mother, who died at 49, a year after learning she had advanced ovarian cancer. When it was clear no therapy could save her, when her life had been reduced to pointless treatments and prolonged hospital stays, she tried twice to end it, first by slitting her wrists and later by drinking rubbing alcohol. Twice, to my 16-year-old thinking, her life had been saved. But when I grew up, I asked myself, saved for what? More misery? An increasing bleak future and no hope for recovery? If I were in a similar position, would I want to be rescued? So that was Jane Brody's question, and now it's time for the news. We'll continue our conversation to address her question further with Dr. Eastwood and Pat Knox when we return. We hope you can stay with us. This is SUNY Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.